Welcome to Good Calls with Dean Blandino, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of Good Calls, episode 36. I'm Dean Blandino, as always, joined by the Caucasian rattlesnake, Travis Hanson. Travis, what's up?
That name makes me laugh every time still. What's up, Dean? How are you?
I'm good. And Joe Madrid, Joe, everybody's on location. They're on at their own location. Again, social distancing. Joe is out in Arizona. What's going on, Joe?
What's up?
Not much. Let's get into it. Let's get started. I'm done with quarantine.
I'm over it.
I'm tired. I'm over it. My nickname is Quarantine, and I think Quarantine is fed up. I called, like I said, I keep talking to my Alexa like it's my girlfriend, and I got to get out. So,
does Alexa love you back?
Yeah, she's tired of you.
She, I snapped at her today because I was like, I asked her a couple times to play the song, and she didn't get it. And I literally snapped at her, and then. I apologized, and we've kind of made up. After the podcast, I may have a glass of wine with her and just kind of hang out. I don't know. I'm hoping. Yeah, I mean, because she knows everything. You know, she knows everything. She's a know-it-all. So, what's going on, Travis? What's going on in the world with NFL schedule? All right. So I didn't watch the NFL schedule release. Did you guys watch it?
How did
they present it? What was the whole idea behind the release? How did they do it?
I'm sure they broke it down into like the conferences and then into like the divisions. And I honestly didn't see it. I think it's a 3-hour show and that's just too much. It's overkill for me. I can just look online and see all the schedules. Like that's
3 hours to. I know we're starved for sports, but 3 hours
right.
to watch. You know, week 8, the Browns are going to play the Jaguars. It 1 o'clock, like I don't know, but I think a couple of key points. So international series, there will be no games overseas, so all the games are going to be in the U.S. Looking at it, obviously there's a lot of flexibility because we don't know, you know, if the season's going to start on time or we're going to have to push back. I think, you know, we're potentially playing into February. Super Bowl is scheduled for February. There's a lot of ifs right now, but let's assume that the season, you know, is gonna start on time. Was there any games that caught your eye that either of you guys that said, hey, that's gonna be a good matchup?
There's a handful of games that caught my eye. If you want me to start, like the first one, I was thinking that, and I sent you a note that the Fox executives, you maybe have spoken to them, maybe you haven't. They just have to be ecstatic with what they got with the week one matchup for America's game of the week. Week one is Breeze at Brady, Saints at Buccaneers, yeah. firing up yeah. that NFC South battle that we're all looking forward to. It's great. And then also in week one, you got the Cowboys coming to town. Hopefully fans can go, because I think that would be an amazing game at SoFi opening up.
That'll be the new stadium. Yeah, Cowboys yeah. Rams new stadium. That was one of the games that I had kind of had my eye on. Hopefully that'll be the stadium will be, you know, ready. I think it's supposed to be ready on time, but who knows if that's going to be an empty stadium and it just kind of takes the air out of a new stadium opening. But definitely the Cowboys, the one Vikings Saints on Christmas Day. That's interesting. Obviously that's been a matchup that has been left, right? Two out of the last 3 years, the Vikings have ended the Saints season on the last play of the game. And so that, you know, Christmas Day, I don't know who, I'm hoping that's not a Fox game because
it is a Fox game. It's a Thursday night football special edition because Christmas is a Friday this year. So I'm thinking Pereira will be at that game.
Yeah, he'll be at that game, and we'll be able to spend Christmas at home.
We can only hope, right?
Yeah, so we'll see. You know, a couple of I was looking at a couple of matchups that maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking, I'm going back, I'm feeling nostalgic, but two that jumped out of me were Steelers-Cowboys week 9, because that's just, it's like those two teams have been, right, America's team and the Steelers have such a big fan base, and that obviously that's a historic rivalry, even though they're not in even the same conference. But Steelers Cowboys, to me, all I can think of is like the 70s and the 80s and even into the 90s with Steelers Cowboys. And then I remember, you know, week 15, Sunday Night Football, 49ers Cowboys. I mean, I remember a time when that was the game, right? 49ers Cowboys was the game in the NFC. You talk about in, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, when, you know, the Cowboys, you know, when Jimmy Johnson came on board and they got Aikman and Emmett and Michael, and the 49ers had Jerry Rice and Montana and then Steve Young. That game was the game. Like, that was the, you know, that game, if it was the NFC Championship game, that was the Super Bowl. One of those two teams is going to win. It was always a big game.
Like the game's at Candlestick, you think of Steve Young, and it was muddy and sliding through the mud.
Oh, yeah. You think back.
So many great memories of that matchup.
You think back to catch even further back with Dwight Clark.
Right.
And I just remember so many of those. But that's definitely a game. And then this is one I feel like, it's kind of a sneaky, I don't think if you looked at the schedule as a casual fan, you would necessarily, this would jump off the page, but I like this game, Titans-Ravens week 11. I mean, I think these two teams obviously have a chance. The Ravens had the best record in the league last year and obviously fell short in the playoffs to, you know, the Titans. And I think it's going to be, Titans are an up-and-coming team, obviously, with with signing Ryan Tannehill long-term. Let's see if he can duplicate what he did last year. And I think that's going to be a great matchup.
You know, I was looking at all the Bucs games. You got Bucs Saints. You've got Bucs Chiefs. You know, I'm looking Tom Brady now.
Well, yeah, I think everybody's going to kind of lean towards, obviously the Bucs are going to be I didn't see how many games they got on in primetime, but that's a big draw now, obviously.
I was going to ask you before we get to this question, just do you know what's the max primetime games a team can have? Is it five?
I don't know.
I thought I heard that somewhere.
I know each team has to have at least one primetime game. But I don't know. I'd have to look and see what the max is. Obviously, you know, teams, I think most teams, if you talk to coaches, you talk to players, they don't like primetime games. I know, you know, from an officiating standpoint, we never like primetime games. You're sitting around all day. If you're on the East Coast and you have to wait until, you know, an 8:20 kickoff, that's a long time to sit around during the day. They're creatures of habit. They like that structure. They want to play early Sunday, get the game in, get it over with, and move on. And that's how, you know, coaches, players, officials, most of them will tell you that. And so playing on primetime, now there's the other side of everybody gets to see you. You can make kind of a name for yourself, those types of things. But I would guarantee guys like Tom Brady and superstars in the league, you know, they don't need to make a name for themselves. They would probably rather just play at 1 o'clock on Sunday. But it definitely creates, you know, it creates travel issues and things like that. You're playing, you know, you could have an early game the following week on Sunday and you're playing well into Sunday evening and late, you know, on the East Coast, you could be playing until Monday morning. And now you got to turn around if it's on the road, that type of thing. It just creates issues with the schedule.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard circumstances where teams are getting back at 4 a.m. their time after a Monday night game. And, you know, you can't have, You have Tuesday off, maybe, but then you got to get right back to it Wednesday, and it's a quick turnaround. So I counted up the primetime games and teams with five primetime games are the Cowboys, 49ers, which those two make sense. They're just a huge draw. Cowboys are so average, but they still have tons of fans and they always do huge ratings. Packers, another team that has a huge fan base. The Bucks got primetime games. Ravens makes sense. They were awesome last year, 14-2. The Chiefs, obviously, your returning champion. And then the Patriots also got five.
That's interesting. I think the Patriots still have such – I think everybody's going to tune in to see just how the Patriots do without Brady. You know,
I think so, too.
There's definitely, you know, there's a big fan base, obviously, more geographical with the Patriots, obviously Northeast. They've been so good though. I wonder if the Patriots are going to be, you know, in 15, 20 years, they're going to be like the Cowboys or the Steelers from the 70s and the 80s, where kids growing up, the Patriots were so good. Even if you live in Kansas or you live in Florida, the Patriots were, if you're watching NFL postseason, you're watching the Patriots. If you're watching Super Bowls, chances are you're watching the Patriots. And kids grow up that way. And I think you're going to see potentially Patriots fans, kids in their, you know, when they grow up in their 20s and 30s, they're going to be Patriots fans, even though they live all over the country. Right. But I think, yeah, I think people are definitely going to still tune in. But, you know, the Bucs, it's obvious. If Jameis is still on the Bucs and there's no Brady, the they're not getting five, you know.
They're getting a Thursday night game, and that's it.
But I am, you know, I think Jameis, that's a good spot for him in New Orleans. And I guess he had the LASIK surgery, and who knows? You know, maybe he could, he's still, what, he's his fifth year in the league? He's so young. In his career, Breeze isn't going to be around forever. So maybe he sits and he learns some things from Breeze, and maybe he becomes the guy, you know, because he's definitely talented.
He showed a lot of maturity with that signing, taking a pretty small deal, you know, respectively, and to go in there and say he wants to learn from two of the best, you know, that to me shows he needs to learn a little bit more.
He just needs to stop posting workout videos online. Like, he just...
How about Cam Newton's workout videos? Does he even want to play?
I haven't seen Cam's. What was Cam's?
Oh, he's just got these, like, beautiful, like, montages shot in black and white with slow motion.
Is he like the Rocky III workout for the first Clubber Lang fight? Like, everything was just like, oh, cool and nice and... And Mr. T was in like a basement gym somewhere in Chicago doing pull-ups, and Rocky was on his motorcycle with Adrian on the back. I don't know.
I don't know either. But I was going to say a couple other games that I thought looked awesome. Like, you got Week 3 Chiefs at Ravens on a Monday night.
Yeah,
that'll be an amazing matchup, I feel like.
Well, the Monday night slate is really good. And I think that, you know, people are talking about with the new TV deal, and you know, is ABC want to get back in the mix and put those games on ABC? And it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. Because the Monday night, and again, talk about Monday Night Football, you're going to have a new crew. I mean, you're going to have a new ESPN that said it's going to be from internal. But, you know, Booger McFarland and Joe Tessitore will not return. So you're going to have a new broadcasting crew. With ESPN Monday Night Football. So it'll be interesting to see who that is and how that plays out.
Yeah, that's good to see those guys are out. I didn't like Tessitore.
That's great. It's great to see guys losing their job. That's nice.
That's not what I mean.
No, it's fine.
But ready for someone different. I didn't like Booger. I didn't think Tessitore was the guy for that job. I thought Tessitore was a college football guy. The excitement level is just a little bit too much for me. Like, oh, here's a 3-yard gain. Can you believe it?
He's excited. He does get excited. But, hey, Joe, are you alive?
I'm still here.
Okay, thanks. All right, just checking on you. I want to make sure.
I'm breathing still. Thank you for checking in.
Do you have your life alert with you?
You know, I just want, I'm really enjoying listening to you guys talk about football and how excited you are about the schedule coming up and all the days we get to
work.
We
are. And thinking about, okay, return to football. What does that look like? I think, you know, the NFL, we talked about, right, so Bundesliga, which is the top German soccer league, that's coming back on May 16th. I know the NFL will probably look at that. And all of these professional sports leagues, everybody's in the same boat. I think the NFL will probably, you know, learn, you know, UFC 249 just went off. You know, it seemed to be, we'll talk about that a little later. It seemed to go off really without too much problems. You know, one fighter was tested positive for COVID-19. But I think you're going to see, you know, as these sports start to come back, the NFL certainly is going to keep an eye on that and see what they can learn. And certainly baseball and basketball and hockey, who obviously have more, you know, more of a sense of urgency because we're already into their seasons, and where football, we have the benefit of, you know, a couple more months. And so that, you know, I know Travis, you told me that the Big Ten, what was it? They extended the suspension of OTAs.
Yeah. Through June 1st. And they'll reevaluate at that time. You had talked to NCAA doctors this week, right?
Yeah. And I know, and there was a quote, NCAA president Mark Emmer, and one of the quotes that caught, I think, everybody's eye was, if a school doesn't reopen, then they're not going to be playing sports. It's that simple. And I think that was, yeah, I was part of a call, and this is, you know, and the NCAA has a task force, and they're monitoring the situation. And I think the NCAA, the return to college sports is going to be a greater challenge than professional sports, because like Dr. Emmert said, it starts with, these are student athletes. They're students first. And it, and there will be no return to play from a school that is not, does not have students in class. And so you're not going to have a situation, at least as far as I'm aware, you're not going to have a situation where you're going to be able to field a football team if you're not, if you don't have students in school and those kids aren't going to class. And so that's going to be the key thing. And when you look at the people that, you know, the things that I've heard, and none of this is written in stone. It's all still up in the air. But really, the four things that they're looking at right now, there's four potential models. And the first would be start in September, full season. Okay, that's the first. The second is starting in October, play a full season, but everything is obviously moved back. The third would be an 8 to 10 game season, and it would be split where you play half the season in the fall, take a break, and then the second half in the spring. Okay, and then the fourth would be no season at all. And from the people that I've talked to, okay, the least likely is 1 in 4. So the least likely is full season starting in September and no season at all. That's the least likely. So then you land into the other two, and the people, again, that I'm hearing most likely right now, and again, this could change tomorrow, is October, full season. And everything gets pushed back a little bit. And that gives, because when you think about one of the things that these schools are going to have to do is they have to reclimatize their students. And what they're saying is that could take anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks. Okay. So basically a school would need students on campus and then 4 to 8 weeks before they can start playing sports. And so that, and they think that that would be in that 6 week period. So if you say 6 weeks and you want to play September 1st, you know, Labor Day weekend, now we're talking about, you know, middle of July where you'd have to have students, you know, starting to, you know, get back on campus. So that's kind of where they are. You know, one of the things that was interesting is they said, listen, if we wait for zero risk, we won't play sports for 2 years. And so I think everybody, and that's not what they're waiting for. Everybody understands that there's going to be risk. It's how do we minimize that risk? How do we get the testing in place to make sure that and it's not just athletes, right? It's not just your student athletes. You have officials, you have people, it goes down to, you know, doctors, people on the sidelines. So one of the things that they're talking about is players and officials would not have to wear masks. But potentially anybody else that's in the bench area, a doctor, a trainer, a water boy, chain crew potentially would have to wear masks. So that's something that is being discussed. And again, testing, when you think about the type of testing that will hopefully be available, there's an antibody test that could take 2 to 3 days. And then there's a viral test that they hope that will be something similar to like a pregnancy test where you'll be able to take it and know right away. And have these tests in place. And when would you start testing your athletes and your personnel? When would you start testing officials? How would you do that? There's so much that goes into this. But again, those are the things that are being discussed. And we'll just kind of see. It's going to be a challenge. But I think the biggest thing, and like Dr. Emmert said, it's not you won't have sports if you don't have students in school. So we could have. You could have a Big Ten schedule and you could have, you know, and you could have 11 of the 12 Big Ten schools in in classes, and that one school just doesn't play football, and that's and doesn't play fall sports, and that's a possibility. That's a possibility right now.
Well, it makes me think about California and in the legislation here. The government hasn't been as lenient as other states like Florida and some others. Like, what if the schools in California are like, oh, we don't, the Pac-12 is like, oh, we're not going to play. We don't want it. We don't want to do that. Our schools aren't going to open. Like, does the Pac-12 just shut down? Do other conferences play without the other conferences? Is that a possibility?
Yeah. You know, I think the thinking now is that they would want all the conferences to start at the same time. But mm-hmm. they understand that you may not get every school from every conference. Because like you said, what if the restrictions in California are not eased, and so you have your California schools in the Pac-12 like UCLA and USC and Cal that can't play, but you have
Oregon,
Utah, and you have Washington, and you have Arizona and Arizona State that still can play. All of these things are gonna be factors. And that's why the college landscape is going to be much more difficult to navigate than professionally. And then again, it's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That is interesting. I'm in Arizona, and like the restaurants are open today. You could actually go sit in a restaurant and have a meal.
Yeah,
which is pretty wild.
I'm actually dying to do that, and I'm dying to go. There's so many good restaurants in LA and Santa Monica and on the West Side. And I'm just worried, you know, and obviously just so many people are affected by this. How many of these restaurants are not going to open ever again? You know,
when this sad, I think about that all the time.
You know, how many I think about walking down the promenade here in Santa Monica when everything does start to reopen, and some that you just say, hey, that place didn't open back up. And it's just, it's sad. It's really sad. And obviously there's, you know, there's so many layers to this that are, it's tragic, but,
yeah, you know, especially on the promenade. I mean, that's not cheap rent. You can't miss a day.
No.
And so I don't know what the future holds, but hopefully we'll get back to normalcy soon. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk UFC 249 in more detail, and Travis will give us a breakdown on some other events that are coming up next on Good Call. All right, we're back on Good Call. I'm Dean Blandino. So we were talking about before the break, sports that may return and when, speculating when they would return. One sport that did come back, it came back in a big way, the UFC. And this has been a journey. We have talked about the UFC, and I know Dana White, and this has been, you know, they had a card scheduled. This card was originally scheduled for March in Brooklyn, was canceled or postponed. Then they were going to do it out here in California on a Native American reservation. That got canceled. And then we were talking about Fight Island, which I still think we need to do. But Private Island, that didn't happen. But finally, Florida opened up, made, you know, sports an essential industry. And in Jacksonville, Saturday night, UFC 249. Great card. It was very interesting. Joe and I actually did a live stream on YouTube with our friend Shane Fazen, who has the Fight Tips YouTube channel. And also with Vince the Anomaly Cachero, who's a professional MMA fighter, and it was a lot of fun. It was a great event. Really interesting. And Joe, since you've been very quiet, I wanted you to take the first shot at this. Like, what were your takeaways about the event, considering the changes and the environment?
Well, the one thing I noticed first, the event was sick. It was such a great card. The undercard was amazing. I know you guys didn't watch it, but I'm still an undercard watcher, but what really was interesting to me is you could
hear. I was watching my children at the time, Joe.
Me and my children were watching the fight. I was showing them moves. You know, we did all that. But one thing that I thought really stood out was how you could hear the punches landing. I thought that was so interesting because you don't have a crowd, and you could hear, like, the force behind punches, and it to me it felt more powerful when you could hear these things landing, you know, jaws getting busted open. It was an amazing. I love that card. I watch it over and over already.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously, you think about what went into it. I know Dana White said that they tested about 1,100. They conducted 1,100 tests for COVID, and one positive. Which, when you think about it, that's great. I mean, you would think that something's going to come up. We're going to get a positive, but to only have one out of 1,100 is great. They caught it. Jacare Souza, the fighter, he was taken off the court, obviously, off the card. Obviously, he was you know, got medical attention, quarantined, the whole deal. And the rest of the event went off really, you know, without a hitch. Obviously, like Joe mentioned, no fans. It was just a very unique. It was almost, if you watch the Ultimate Fighter, yeah, with some of those fights, where it's a smaller, it's in a gym setting. You've got, just the teams and the teammates there, and it's just not the big crowd. But one of the things for me that was just really interesting was, just yes, that you could hear, but it almost was like without the crowd reaction. And the one for me was the Ngannou Rozenstruik fight, where it was just, I mean, Ngannou hit him with a left hand that just he was out cold, and it was inside of a minute. And it was watching, you know, this knockout without the the fans would have been such a big reaction. But without the fan reaction, it felt like, it just felt kind of like, it gave me like a bad feeling.
It's
like
almost kind of eerie, imagine, right?
Yeah. I've seen this, and it's not like, imagine watching somebody get knocked out on the street, you know, like it's not, and it just had that more of that kind of feel. Whereas if the fans are going crazy and it's like a, you know, you're not so focused on the energy of the crowd and the fighters celebrating. You're not so focused on the guy who just got, you know, concussed and knocked out cold. And it for me, it just felt different. Like it just had a different feeling.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it was just, you know, it was interesting to see how that played out. But I agree, like to hear the coaches and
yeah, that
and
was cool.
The punches landing and listening to the instructions, and, you know, and even so Greg Hardy, former NFL player, Greg Hardy, who was on the first fight on the card, actually won his fight, won a decision. And he said he could hear Daniel Cormier, who was one of the broadcasters.
Yeah, yeah.
He said he could hear his instructions in terms of what, you know, he was getting hit with leg kicks, low kicks early. And he could hear his instructions. And he actually, instead of checking the low kick, he actually pulled his leg back, and it ended up the kick ended up hitting on his shin, and he hurt,
he broke his toe,
you know,
right? Yeah.
Broke his toe. And that actually impacted the fight.
Changed the whole fight.
It was very DeCastro broke his toe on that low kick, and it actually changed the whole fight because he was using it as an effective technique up until that point.
That was another cool thing. I loved listening to being able to hear the coaches. It really felt very personal. Like you could hear the coaches saying,
yeah, it was cool. And then obviously the two co-main events, Henry Cejudo, winning that fight. And I know there was some question about the stoppage. Joe didn't like the stoppage. I thought it was justified. Dominic Cruz, he hit Cruz with a real flush knee right on the chin. Cruz went down. He was working his way. He looked like he was trying to work his way up to his hands and knees and trying to get in, but he was taking punches. He wasn't covering up. I thought the referee, I thought in that instance, in the heat of the moment, you're going to lean towards fighter safety. And I thought that was the right call.
Cejudo looked great.
And then
Cejudo looked really, really good. He really did.
And then he announced his retirement. And then, we don't know if what that means. You know, maybe that's a negotiating ploy with the UFC and trying to get more money, because obviously he's felt that he hasn't gotten the attention and the marketing that many other fighters. But naturally, when you talk about a guy that's fighting in featherweight and bantamweight, those weight classes don't get a lot of attention. They're, you know, very technically skilled, And if you want to watch technical fighters, you know, and really good technical fights, the lower weight classes tend to bring that, but they just don't get the attention that, you know, even like the lightweight at 155 and then beyond that get. So that was interesting. And then the main event with Tony Ferguson and Justin Gaethje, what a fight. And obviously Gaethje, you know, I thought Ferguson had more weapons. I thought he had he had more in his arsenal to win that fight, but Gaethje, we knew Gaethje was tough and that he was going to stand in there and throw but he had a great game plan. This is not the Justin Gaethje that we saw in his first couple of UFC fights. He's learned now that not getting hit is a pretty good, it's a very good strategy. And he's incorporated that. And he did get dropped at the end of the second down. And I think he would have been interesting to see if that had happened with, you know, 2 minutes left in the round versus 5 seconds.
Yeah.
But he hit Tony Ferguson with everything but the kitchen sink. And Tony Ferguson, like, literally, he's a zombie. Like, he could be an extra in The Walking Dead. Like,
that he dude, took every shot. He takes licks,
he took every
bro.
Shot and came forward
nonstop.
And finally, in that stoppage, I think that stoppage was Herb Dean. Look, after Big John McCarthy and Herb Dean are the two best referees in MMA history, like, in my opinion. And Herb Dean stopped the fight. Ferguson obviously was still on his feet, but I haven't seen a fight like that where a guy takes a punch and shakes his head.
Yes.
Like, he's literally, they always talk about, you know, shake the cobweb. Like, I've never seen it visually like that. Where
it's like somebody poured an ice chest over his head. And he just shook.
Yeah.
Dude.
And he just shook his head like he was trying to get his senses back.
Yeah.
And he backed away towards the cage and kind of almost tried to run. And, you know, I think Herb Dean was justified in stopping it. And, you know, he was going to lose a decision anyway. He wasn't going to knock Gaethje out at that point or submit him. He just didn't have it at that point. And I thought it was a good stoppage. And you don't want to see, you know, those referees, you talk about NFL and basketball and other sports, they're first responders in a way, and they do protect the players. But when you talk about an MMA or boxing referee, you know, that truly can be life and death. And that is a very difficult position to be in. And I think you're always going to lean towards protecting the player.
I did not dislike that stoppage. I mean, Ferguson was getting just murked, bro. He was getting beat up. Like, I think the double weight cut had a huge impact on him, and he'll never admit it because he's just he's just a zombie. But he didn't look great. But Gaethje looked amazing, much better than I've ever seen him. Head movement was great. Accuracy was on point. Hell of a fight.
He looked
man.
Good.
Really good fight. I'm bummed we're probably not going to see, you know, Ferguson, Khabib, but, you know, that's how it goes.
But I think overall, I think the impact that we'll have to say that we can have a professional sporting event, there's testing in place, I think it's a positive, and we can build on that. So transition a little bit, Travis, what can we expect coming up in terms of
sport? Yeah, you have more UFC coming up later this week. With their three events in the 8 days. You got May 13th and 16th. You got a couple matches coming up. You got MLB had an interesting conference call today, talking about their return, and there's going to be a proposal that the owners have now submitted to the MLB Players Association, and that entailed there was a Ken Rosenthal article about that, talking about what could be discussed. They haven't really given any details, or hasn't leaked out yet. But it could be like an approximate 80-game season to start in early July, in a regionalized format, meaning that teams would play within their division. They'd play their division opponents and then also non-division opponents in the geographical area, kind of like the AFC or the AL East would play the NL East. So you could see some Mets and Yankees series. So that would be kind of cool. This is obviously unpredictable with COVID-19, and with the schedule could change in progress. So it was like a 78 to 82 games. One of the things that Rosenthal had put out there was potentially 4 3-game series with division opponents, and then 3 2-game series against non-division opponents. So it'd be interesting.
Yeah, I think I think the biggest roadblock right now between the union and the league is going to be how the revenue is split, because I know the league is going to present, or they had decided upon a proposal for the MLBPA in that where they would split the revenue. So whatever the revenue is, it would be split 50% between the league and the players. And the players, they're not going to go for that, because the way they view that, they look at that as like a hard salary cap. And where the league is saying, no, this is, we don't know what the revenue is going to be, but we're going to split it 50-50. And if it's, you know, if we do get additional revenue, because I think baseball is a sport that is more reliant on the gate and the fans, you know, because you have so many more games, and you have so many, you know, more opportunities for that live gate. Whereas football, you know, it's more TV driven in terms of the money, where you don't have, you know, you have 8 home games, regular season, two preseason games. Maybe you get a postseason game or two, versus, you know, 81 home games in baseball, including all the spring training stuff. So I think that's going to be one of the roadblocks. But, you know, it's good to hear that they're at least talking about it since it's starting in July. And we can get a baseball season in. That would be you know, best of the situation right now. What about NASCAR, Travis? What do we have up to date on that?
Yeah, we're set to return May 17th with the race at Darlington. So that's great. I know Fox is fired up about that, ready to get that back on the air. And I'm sure that'll do huge numbers with all the NASCAR fans. You mentioned the Bundesliga and that coming back May 16th. EPL, English Premier League, they may be able to resume closed doors June 1st. Brady Mickelson versus Manning Wood. This has been given a date now. It'll be May 24th. It'll be televised on TNT. It'll be on at 2 Eastern and 12 Mountain, Dean.
I don't know. 12 Mountain. I guess, like, I don't. Like, I like all those guys. I'm not excited about that. I'm not, the idea of these 4 guys playing golf and their little, you know, their witty comebacks and making fun of each other, it just doesn't interest me.
And their cashmere sweaters.
Did you watch the first one?
I did not watch the first one.
The Mickelson Woods, I didn't either. And adding Brady and Manning in there, I guess, will.
I'm sure there'll be some funny stuff. Peyton's hilarious. Yeah. Tom Brady has a good sense of humor. You know, Mickelson's funny. I think Tiger has a good sense of humor. He just doesn't show it all that much, but I don't know.
I'm
sure it'd be a fun event, but
remember Brady and Johnny Drama on Entourage. Like, that was pretty funny when he broke his driver.
Yeah, that's
good.
That's right.
They should reenact.
Yeah, there won't be any fans there. They'd all be in their own cart. It can be interesting.
And then NHL, NBA, you know, the NHL,
yeah.
I think not much. Not much is, I haven't heard much on hockey, which.
Yeah, the updates are supposed to come out Mondays, and as of this recording, I hadn't heard anything new on NHL. NBA, though, has gotten some interesting things that came out there.
Well, they're saying, I mean, I know Adam Silver's telling, you know, it was reported that he was telling players to be prepared to play next season without fans. That's interesting. And, you know, because basketball is one of the sports that I really feel like home court advantage is, you know, if you look at the numbers, that's a real thing. And without fans, I wonder how that's going to impact those players.
Thinking about no fans at the UFC, like no fans in a basketball game, it would be insane. You would hear everything that those guys are saying on the court to each other. And you could hear that. You think about like Charles Barkley and a guy who was known for trash talking. Like, to be able to hear what he was saying on the court would be insane. Like, I don't know.
Well, I wonder if they would tone it down, because
they
some of that stuff would probably not be, you know, would not be good for kids or young audience, whatever it is. Any sport, when you start talking about trash talking, it's not just...
You'd have to put it on cable TV, right? On late-night cable TV.
Dean, aren't you a floor seat guy? So you probably hear it all the time, right?
at the 4C?
Aren't you a floor seat guy?
Oh, floor seat.
Floor seat.
No, I'm not. I've never sat, the closest I've been was maybe like 3-4 rows back, but I've never been on the on the floor.
What?
One day, maybe.
Get your agent on the phone right now. I'm going to talk to him.
One day. Before we go to break, I want to give an update on the CBPL or the CPBL, okay, the Chinese Professional Baseball League. So as of Monday, here are the standings, okay? And I don't remember who picked who, but we're going to have to remind me. So in first place, the Rakuten Monkeys. You had the Monkeys. They're 14-4. Yeah. The China Trust Brothers are 9-11.
Scott
had
them.
The Bomb Guardians are 8-11, and the Uni Lions are 8-13.
I had the Lions.
So you had the Lions.
I had the Lions.
So it looks like the Rakuten Monkeys are starting to put some distance between them and the China Trust Brothers. So that's where we are there, and they did. Fans, right?
Speaking of putting distance between people, they're starting to let fans go to those games, but they have to sit like a few seats apart. And I think it was up to 1,000. They were allowed to have 1,000 fans at the game.
Nice.
And the initial report was that they wanted 200 fans, but then they upped it to 1,000, so they opened it up to more than they initially wanted.
All right. Cool.
That's a positive note.
All right, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about who's the best player to wear number 35. We'll do our last dance, blah, 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 update. And we'll talk. Joe's going to teach me something after the break. Next on Good Call. All right, we're back. Good Call. And we started this thing 2 weeks ago, and it was episode 34. We had this discussion about who's the best player to wear jersey number 34 across all sports, and we each picked a player, and we debated. Twitter chimed in, and we came up with Shaq. So Shaq was the best 34. Last week we talked about the best player to wear number 35. We added a qualifier that said he had to wear 35 for at least half of his career. We came up with four names: Frank Thomas, Tony Esposito, Justin Verlander, and Kevin Durant. So Twitter, the Twitter vote came out: Kevin Durant at 37%, Frank Thomas 31%, Justin Verlander 22%, Tony Esposito 10%. So I just did some research, and I'll break it down real quick. So Frank Thomas, 1990 to 2008, career numbers: 301 hitter, 2,468 hits, 521 home runs. He's only one of nine players to hit 300 for their career and also have 500 home runs. Guys like Babe Ruth, Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, more recently Manny Ramirez and Albert Pujols. 1,704 RBIs. He was 47th in total bases for his career, 20th in home runs, 25th in RBI. All-star five times. Was an MVP back-to-back seasons, 93-94. Silver Slugger four times, which is the best offensive player at each position. Won the batting title one time. Number retired by the White Sox, number 35. He was a first ballot Hall of Famer. Did win a World Series with the White Sox in 2005, but was not on the postseason roster due to injury. On the downside, was a DH after the 1997 season, so did play over half of his career as a DH. And this interesting stat about Frank Thomas, he never had a sacrifice bunt in his career. Huh. So the big hurt never, it was always a big hurt. It was never a little hurt. So he always.
He's definitely a big dude. I've seen him in the studio. He's a big dude. He's huge.
And you know he's doing the Nugenics. So that's how he stays, so fit and virile.
You know what I think about Frank Thomas? I think Frank Thomas had the sweetest stroke for a right-handed hitter. He had a really beautiful swing for a right-handed hitter. Usually they say the left-handed hitters that look nicer. Big Hurt had a beautiful swing.
Well, he had that unorthodox swing where he lifted his right foot off the ground when he hit. It just seems like he wouldn't be able to generate much power, and he did.
Good call, Trav.
He's obviously, and when you think about, and we'll come back to him. I just want to give the kind of their their resume. Tony Esposito, not a lot of people know who Tony Esposito is. Played, was a goalie for in the NHL with the Chicago Blackhawks, 1967 to 1984, longest career of the four. Rookie year, had an unbelievable rookie year. He won the Calder Trophy, which is for the best rookie, won the Vezina Trophy, which is for the best goalie, had 15 shutouts, which is still the modern-day record, and they won the Stanley Cup in 69-70. NHL first team three times, second team twice, Vezina Trophy three times, All-Star six times, named to the NHL's 100 greatest players. He's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. 10th on the all-time wins list with 423. 9th in games played, 886. 76 shutouts, which is 11th all-time. Number 35 retired by the Blackhawks. And he did win that Stanley Cup in 1969-70. So that's Tony Esposito. So number 35. And one of the things about Tony Esposito is he was the first goalie to wear 35. And because Tony Esposito was so good, that became kind of one of the it numbers for goalies. Guys like Tom Barrasso and some others were wearing 35 after Tony. And Tony Esposito's nickname was Tony O because he had so many shutouts. So
nice.
Next guy was Justin Verlander, 2005 to the present. This is the first guy that we've had as a present player. 225 wins, which is 70th on the all-time list. 3.33 ERA, which is not high on the list in terms of career, but playing in the American League in today's day and age, that's a good number. I even went a little, analytics, 46th in adjusted ERA, which is 129 for all the analytic geeks out there. I'm more of a, Joe and I have had this conversation. I think WAR it's subjective. I think anybody could say, oh, he had a great WAR. Well, I'm not a big, like whatever you want to call it, these new statistics. But I did put it in adjusted ERA, which takes into consideration external factors like ballparks and opponents. He is 46 all time. 3,006 strikeouts. That is when you think about pitchers, 3,000 strikeouts is a milestone. 18th on the all time list. 8 All Star games. One time a All MLB team. World Series champ in 2017, but that doesn't count because the Astros cheated. AL MVP once. 2 Cy Youngs, 1 Triple Crown, which would be Triple Crown for pitchers is what? Win, strikeouts, and whip, I guess. Rookie of the Year, 1 led the league in wins 3 times, ERA, 1 led the league in strikeouts 5 times, and he had 3 no-hitters. And then lastly, Kevin Durant. So Kevin Durant, 2007 to the present. Won an MVP once, Finals MVP twice, All-Star 10 times, All-NBA first team 6 times, second team 3 times, Rookie of the Year, scoring champ 4 times. He has 22,940 points. That's good for 31st career, and that's ahead of guys like Clyde Drexler, Gary Payton, and Larry Bird. And he's 8th in player efficiency rating, which player efficiency rating is another kind of new school stat that takes all of a player's positive accomplishments and subtracts their negative accomplishments and returns a per minute rating of the player's performance. So he's 8th all time, and guys like Michael Jordan and LeBron and others are ahead of him, but he's obviously up there. So that's their resume. Anybody we can eliminate off the top?
Those are all really good. I think you have to take the current player out at this point.
KD?
I mean, Verlander does have great numbers, but I don't know. They're all really great. Like, the numbers are amazing.
You want to take KD out of the mix?
I think, okay, so let's say of these four, let's ask this question. Was he ever considered the best player in his sport during his career?
Who?
Okay,
Kevin Durant?
So Frank Thomas.
No.
Was Frank Thomas ever... And I think Frank Thomas, although 93 and 94, he won back-to-back AL MVPs, but he was playing, like, you had Barry Bonds, you had guys like, who were also playing at that time, Kirby Puckett, who probably, he was in the same conversation, but he wasn't head and shoulders above.
That's an interesting way to put it. So, yeah, I don't think so on Frank.
Tony Esposito, and I know we have to dig into, like, in terms of NHL goalies, but he was a guy, especially early in his career, that was kind of a, like, this new wave of goalie. And he probably was considered at one time one of the best goalies. I don't think he was head and shoulders above, you know, where it was like a Wayne Gretzky type or Mario Lemieux type. So I don't think Tony Esposito fits that category either. Verlander,
did he wear the Jason mask though?
Esposito, I'd have to see.
That's a good question.
He wore, like, those were the goalies. Those were the goalies. He actually, the mask that he wore.
I'm going to have to look it up.
He did wear, because those were the masks that they were kind of elaborate, like the designs, but it did look like a Jason mask. Yeah, he did. Actually, Tony Esposito had the Jason mask.
You know what, Travis? I got to give you props. 36 episodes in. Great question. Finally one. Nice work.
Finally a good question.
Good job.
He did wear the goalie mask. So we're gonna give him credit for that. You know, you think about Verlander, I don't think he's always been in the conversation, but when you talk about, you know, other pitchers that have pitched in the same time, like Kershaw and some of the other guys, I don't think Verlander's been head and shoulders above anybody. And then you get down to Durant. You know, I think Durant has been in the conversation. I think there was a point where when Golden State won that title, that first title with him and beat LeBron, I think people were saying Kevin Durant was the best player on the planet.
Yeah, there's definitely an argument for that.
I think you could definitely make that argument. Durant is a monster.
He's what, 6'11"? He shoots threes and he can get up and down the court. He plays defense. He's pretty incredible. Just the size, just amazing.
Dude, so
to me, I think I'm eliminating Esposito and Verlander, and it's between Frank Thomas and Durant.
All right, well, are we voting?
What's that?
We voting? We're
voting.
I'm going Durant.
Well, that's who I'll vote. Everybody vote. Okay, so Travis.
I'm Durant.
You're saying Durant is the best, is the guy?
Yes.
I'm going Frank Thomas on this one.
Yeah, I'm torn because I think Durant, especially with the injury, I think Durant will eventually, you know, I think 4 or 5 more years, I think as he starts to climb the ladder in terms of history and accomplishments against guys like Michael Jordan and Magic and Kareem and those types, I think Durant will eventually be there, but I think right now in his career, I think I got to go Frank Thomas.
And he's got the best nickname out of all the guys, and that's part of it.
So Frank Thomas.
No, Travis, you have the best nickname.
Yeah, I'm not in the Hall of Fame.
All right, best player to wear 36. Let's just set it up. Let's pick four.
I feel like this is a no-brainer. No brainer.
Well, I think Jerome Bettis.
Obviously. Yep,
right? That was one I had.
Without question.
But without question. And then you throw in the other guy who did it. Played 22 years, 314 wins.
Gaylord Perry.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think Bettis was a machine. And I met him, Super Bowl 49, nicest dude, like coolest guy. Thank you for the tickets, Dean.
Hey, I found an interesting one who also wore 36. Shaq wore 36 for the Celtics, guys.
No, that doesn't count. Shaq's off the board.
I don't think he played many games there, though.
Well, I'm going to go. So I agree, Bettis. Who did we just say? Who was the other guy?
Gaylord Perry.
I think a guy, so, and I want to make sure he wore 36. I think he did. Because this is a guy, I mean, not a lot of current people. No. I'm thinking of somebody else. I'm thinking Marion Motley, but he wore 76.
36 wasn't all that popular.
Yeah, it wasn't a big, yeah, I agree.
Well, we got to come up with two more. even if we got to throw in like a Rasheed Wallace or something. Rasheed wore 30 a lot of his career, and he also wore 36.
All right, let's see here.
All right, well, I'm Googling. We'll come.
Robert Hubbard? I don't even know who that is.
now we're just grabbing names.
Robin Roberts. Who? Robin Roberts, maybe? He is a pitcher years ago.
Come on, man. This is the bus gets this one. Like, there are some that are gimmies.
I don't think we even need to have I don't think
if we went backwards in the show, it's like you go to 23 and you know who gets that one.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to give it to Jerome. Okay.
That's an obvious. No, it's just so obvious.
Okay. All right. So let's move on. Last Dance. I don't know. Did you guys watch what's happening?
I haven't watched it yet. I haven't watched it either. I don't have time for it. Like, it was exciting the first couple weeks, and then I fell off. I don't have 2 hours on a Sunday night.
All I know is my man Patrick Ewing said in an interview that he is not watching it, and he, like me, is not watching it for that reason. He does not want to relive that crap over again. We all get it.
I instantly thought of you.
Michael Jordan was an amazing basketball player, but I think Scott actually said this, Scott, who's been on the podcast, I think he summarized it really well. He said, a lot of people think Michael Jordan was so great because he was an asshole, right? Like, he was so driven that caused him to push people and to be like, and to not be the nice guy. But the way Scott presented it, and I agree, is that they're not mutually exclusive, right? He was a great player, but he was also an asshole. And it's not because he was an asshole that he was so great. So that's my take. Michael Jordan was an asshole, great player. And, you know, he beat the Knicks. So I'm kind of biased.
Joe, you know about some gambling. Did Jordan have a gambling issue? He said he didn't have a gambling problem. So I
just think it's how you define a gambling problem. I think what they talked about on the show, hey, look, like, 10 grand to Michael Jordan is like dropping $100 to me. I don't have a gambling problem, but I'll lose $100 here and there. No big deal. Jordan drops 10 G's. It's not a big deal. The guy's probably a billionaire by now.
Yeah. If you're gambling away all your wealth and your family, you know, your family, you lose your house. Yeah. That's a gambling problem.
But I did love his response. He said, I don't have a gambling problem. I have a competition problem. And I feel like, you know, I get that. I totally get that.
Oh, it's the same thing.
Because I'm out here doing, I'm out here doing cartwheel contests on the sand today because I just want to win, you know.
You and Michael Jordan, that's what you have. But you did say that, Travis, you said ESPN Now, you're going to move up some of the release of some of these documentaries like Lance Armstrong and Bruce Lee and some others.
Yeah. So I wanted to know what, and the other one that they mentioned was Maguire Sosa in the battle for the home run.
Those are all interesting. I mean, this is
right.
But I guess like what I'd want to know is obviously the this is, you know, Phil Jackson, and they filmed this knowing that they would hopefully win a title and they would be able to air this at some point. Are these documentaries going to be more of the documentaries that we're used to, where it's done kind of after the fact and we're just kind of going back and reliving this, or how it's going to be done? Because obviously fascinating stories. You talk about Lance Armstrong, Bruce Lee, Maguire Sosa. Like, I remember that, you know, the Maguire Sosa. I mean, you want to talk about baseball being the thing during those times. I mean, that was like, I was watching Cardinals games and I was watching, you know, Giants games to see if they were going to, or and Sosa Cubs games to see if Bonds or Sosa or Maguire were going to hit a home run. And I'm a Dodger fan.
That was a really cool time. That was definitely
a cool time, regardless of whether they were juicing or what. But it was, you know, it was part of the national conversation, whereas baseball hasn't been that way, you know, at least for the right reasons, all that often recently.
Listen, if I'm the commissioner, I'm sending juice to all these cats right now. Just let's get this thing back up. Yo, here's some tests. Here's some DECA. Let's do this thing, man. Here's some cream, clear, whatever. What do you need?
The baseballs. I mean, Verlander was very adamant that they were juicing the baseballs. And he was, you know, pretty annoyed about it. So because obviously, you know, chicks dig the home runs.
I was just going to say, you guys remember the big unit commercial where he was taking batting practice, Randy Johnson, and he's like, dig the long ball. That was a great campaign.
Chicks dig the long ball.
Chicks do dig the long ball.
Yeah, but all those I'd be interested in watching. I mean, I think the, you know, the 30 for 30s are so well done. I still, honestly, the best sports-related documentary that I've seen, and I know it's not necessarily traditional sports, but the HBO special that they did on Andre the Giant was
unbelievable. Oh, that was awesome. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Like, I'll rewatch that every once in a while, and that was like...
Bro, did you see the last video Tyson posted, by the way? Like, change the subject, but did you see
him? I'm having a moment about Andre the Giant, and then you're going to see a Tyson video?
I was gonna talk about how he's larger than life. And,
I'll tell you what it is. Andre the Giant wasn't a real fighter. Tyson was, and he's 53, and he's still a monster.
I would take in his prime, I'd take Andre the Giant over Mike Tyson.
That's so silly, dude. That's so ridiculous.
I'm just saying. You say he's not a real fighter.
Mike Tyson would hit him with one kidney shot and he'd be dead. Like that big old like.
Are you kidding me?
Are you joking right now?
If he gets his hands on you,
it would never happen.
Did you see?
If he gets Prince's mitts
Bride,
on him.
Did you see the Princess Bride? He was throwing boulders at people.
I'm just going to tell you, I'm not going to edit this. Like, you sound so ridiculous right now. I'm not going to edit this out. I'm going to post
Andre,
it.
Andre the Giant would beat, I will put it out on Twitter, in their prime, Andre the Giant would beat Mike Tyson.
Bro, Tyson would kill, like, he could thigh punch him. Like, Ferguson was throwing the thigh punches on Saturday. Tyson would throw a left hook to Andre's thigh and put him down.
He's Andre the Giant, okay?
He lost to Hulk Hogan.
No, that was a fix.
Oh, it's fixed now? Now WWF is fixed?
No, watch the documentary.
I've watched it. Bro, Tyson.
Andre let him win.
Go to Tyson's Instagram today. Monster.
Mike Tyson looks great. He looks
great. Didn't Vander Holyfield put some stuff out there, too? He's ready to get back.
And Holyfield would beat Tyson again, like he did twice. So Mike Tyson looks amazing. He looks like a beast. I actually love Mike Tyson, but Andre the Giant is Andre the Giant.
Dude, I watch his Instagrams and I just get fired up. I go outside, hit the bag, and I feel like I'm doing exactly what he's doing.
Why don't you go hit the bag now? And Travis and I will wrap up.
All right. I'll see you guys later.
Does that mean he's going to stop the recording?
But no, I do need you, Joe, because before we wrap up, I need you to teach me TikTok because I got a TikTok account.
Oh, you
do? I don't know. I want to do like movie scenes and I don't know how to do it. So you're going to have to teach me that.
Yeah,
like,
I don't see.
How does it work? How does TikTok work? Like, I go on the video. Like, I'll go on TikTok right now. Okay, I'm going on TikTok. And.
You act like I'm 16 years old.
You act like it's something. Okay, so it's like when your husband.
here's how TikTok. I believe this is how TikTok
that
works.
That just came up on TikTok. I don't.
No, so you have to find one. Like, the way that I've seen it done is you find another person doing the video you want to do, and then you could like record over theirs. That's why you see the same videos over and over and over on TikTok. It's the same thing. You just like do what they're doing.
Oh, because it's the same. Yeah, because I'm trying to get like movie quotes, and I see people doing movie quotes and they're acting it out, and I don't know where to get the movie quotes from on TikTok, other than play the movie on my TV and then do the video.
You know what?
An in-app thing.
Okay, let's save this for episode 37. I'll research it.
Okay.
Because I'm pretty sure you like I could figure that out. Because I know I got some friends who are young, and they'll be able to help me out with this.
Okay, cool. All right, and so the other thing, I don't know if it's COVID or what, but I got an apology the other day.
So, oh man, when you sent that to me, I was dying.
So this was a tweet from, and I don't know if it's his real name, but his Twitter account is Stevie Wonder. And on November 29th,
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not his real name, Dean.
I know, but I'm just saying, maybe it could be. It's not a crazy name. It's not like Stevie Jinkalakowicz. So
yeah, that guy.
He on November 29th, 2019 at 11:19 a.m., which I can only imagine that was probably a Sunday during the NFL window. Dean, I hate you so effing much. You're a dumb bitch. Okay. And then nothing. Okay. I don't respond. Like you can DM me. You can tweet me nonsense. I don't respond unless I think it's funny. That's just stupid. So I don't respond. And then
you said November 29th,
November 29th,
2019. Was that, that's a Friday night. Oh, that's a Friday. Is that after Thanksgiving, maybe?
What are you, Rain Man? Like, what is Travis Rain Man? Definitely a Friday. That's definitely a Friday. What's going on with you over there?
I'm looking at a thing called a calendar, Joe.
It was the Friday
after Thanksgiving.
Friday after Thanksgiving. So we had
early games, yeah.
So we had college games. So then this was on, when did I send you this? This was like Friday. Hey, Dean, I'm sorry about what I said. I was in a rough spot. You're just doing your job, and I appreciate the work you put in. I hope you can forgive me. This is like months later. Like, and it, I was actually, like, for a second there, I was like, wait, is this like a joke? And then I was like kind of like touched. And I didn't respond. I responded, thanks for the note. Apology accepted. Hope you are doing well now. Like that to me, like, it's gross.
Can you give the dude a follow back?
Yeah, I guess, you know what? I'll follow him.
You know, I have a confession. Dean, I've got a confession to make.
What's that?
That was me.
What, this is one of your burner accounts?
No, I'm just kidding. But that would be funny. I'm probably going to do that next season.
Yeah, well, it's not going to. You could probably do it. I get plenty of those, so it's fine. That's my apology. That's my hope for the world is that we'll get out of quarantine and people will be kinder and gentler.
I'm going to open mine up with Des. If somebody sends you a direct message that says Des caught it, that was me. Just letting you know.
That's you?
Yeah, that's me.
Okay, great. Let's bring in Blandino before we go.
All right, let's do it. Olive Garden for lunch is aggressive.
Dude, all you can eat.
Dude, I'm not a big lunch guy, like big meals. Like I just pick throughout, like you see me in the studio. I don't like to eat a big meal. Like Olive Garden for lunch is very aggressive. Like it's like you go to Olive Garden for lunch, you're pretty much shot for the rest of the day.
You're done.
Like, I don't know what you're going to be like. I don't know what you're going to be doing. Like you can't drink after that. You can't do any kind of exercise. The only like Olive Garden for lunch is like after your Thanksgiving meal.
Yeah, that's like ultimate all, like what is it? Unlimited breadsticks? Come on,
unlimited like Olive Garden. Like I'm like my mom was born in Italy. I come from an Italian American background. Like I love Italian food. I am not mad at Olive Garden. Like I'm not like oh I can't go to Olive Garden. I'll go to Olive Garden.
I love Olive Garden.
But Olive Garden at like noon on a Tuesday, like that's hardcore. Like that is like I think when this ends, I don't know where the nearest Olive Garden is, but
there's one by me in the Fox Hills Mall.
Perfect. Wow,
that's going to be one of our first trips,
dude. Let's do that
right now. Let's book it. Okay, we'll go to Olive Garden for lunch. We'll go to Olive Garden for lunch, and we'll
drink a couple glasses of Chardonnay.
Do a couple glasses of Chardonnay. Very very sexual city like. And we'll go have Olive Garden for lunch, do it up, and then we'll see how productive we are the rest of the day. All right, let's do that.
Wait, I want to one-up it. Let's all throw on, like, double-breasted suits, slick our hair back. Right, let's go straight up gangster.
Now it's becoming like a discrimination.
You know what, Dean? I'm half as much Italian as you are, so I can go here.
I did my sister did her 23andMe. I haven't done it, but we're like 89% Italian and like Greek and some Turkish or something. I don't know.
I don't care what the 23andMe is. I was raised in an Italian household, which makes me 100% Italian. So I'm going to double breast. I'm going to
raise in a household too.
Yeah, I understand. I'm going to put on a olive double breasted suit, oversized. And we're going to Olive Garden. And we're going to do it up.
I'm in.
I'm driving my Cadillac there.
I'm going to wear a velour jumpsuit. Okay, that's what I'm going to wear.
Bro, you know I've got a velour jumpsuit because you snapped a picture of me in it.
Yep.
You're walking on Rodeo.
Yo, I'm driving the caddy to Olive Garden with a double-breasted olive suit on. It's on.
All right.
We'll bring Shane. We'll bring all the guests, all the friends of the show. We'll bring Scott. And we'll let Dean pay the bill.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be at least 70, 80 bucks. Boom.
Lunch is on me. All the breadsticks you could want.
Boom. That's it. Do it.
This has been Good Calls with Dean Blandino. Please follow me on Twitter at Dean Blandino and Instagram at Dean.Blandino. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Rules Podcast. And be sure to rate our podcast on the iHeartRadio app and on Apple Podcasts.
Good Calls with Dean Blandino is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.